Okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not terrified.
All right. So I want to do the Laplacian today, and I want to show you something that I forgot to tell you about bases. When you go between differential forms and a coordinate basis, there are really two different kinds of bases that you deal with: coordinate bases and orthonormal bases. Every vector you guys have ever written has been in an orthonormal basis. I hat, j hat, k hat, or r hat, theta hat, phi hat. But you can choose all sorts of basis vectors. They don't have to be orthonormal. And sometimes you find yourself using a coordinate basis, which is just built out of coordinates. So I want to talk about that in detail. Now, those two topics, and then I might do one example. I posted some problems for you today. What I did is I took all of the vector formulas out of the front inside cover of Jackson, and there are about 10 of them or something, and have asked you to write those using differential forms and prove them. Now, the proof of all of them will pretty much be in the writing. Right. Once you write them down, it'll be self-evident just from what you've written, and the Poincaré lemma or the converse to the Poincaré lemma will tell you that, oh, it's got to be that. Or just rearranging things. So I don't think the proofs are actually hard. We'll see. For some of them, I know you need to use these epsilon relations. So you'll have two duals or something, and you have to work through what a pair of epsilons always turns into a bunch of Kronekers and metrics. And once you use that identity and make that replacement, then you'll get those formulas. And I think all of those will be one of those three things. It'll either be epsilon identities, having said that, identities, or it will be Poincaré or converse to Poincaré. I doubt if there's anything else in there. The main thing is just using what we've recognized now as div, curl, and grad, and writing in the differential form notation instead of writing in terms of vectors. I'll do an example and try and make that a little clearer exactly what I want you to do with those. So let's see. Let me add here an example, and we'll make one up or think of one. So, basis. When we write differential forms, we've been writing things like a mu dx mu for a form. That's from one form. This is a coordinate basis. What's a coordinate basis? It's a basis made up of differentials of the n independent coordinates. Okay, simple idea. But they may not be orthonormal. Whether they're orthonormal depends on, some metric. Okay, so the idea is there is often some inner product on pairs of these basis vectors. Okay, fair to think of these as vectors, so I can take their dot product. There's some sort of inner product. And what I get is the metric. Well, the metric is symmetric. So this is just a function now. This is just a set of, n squared functions. N plus 1 over 2 functions, because it's a symmetric matrix. We've gotten rid of the vectors, and we've replaced it by this matrix. So that tells us how to take the inner product of any two forms. So if we have the inner product of A and B, you know, take dot product. This is perfectly good generalization of the dot product here. We require this to be linear. So we have A mu dx mu and B mu dx mu. And the A and B are just functional coefficients. They come out. Then we're left with dx mu, which inner product with dx mu. And that's just g. So we get g mu nu from that. And we have our A mu and our B mu. And that's our usual inner product that we had in general relativity, for example, for a general metric. That's how you would write it in differential forms. I like to use this bracket notation because I like to. No particular reason for that. But if you have this inner product, well, notice this G is anything at all. That's not necessarily 1, 1, 1. Right? So that is not, in general, orthonormal. If g mu nu is not equal to 1, 1, 1, you know, however many 1s you want. So if g is not the identity, then your basis is not orthonormal. We can introduce an orthonormal basis. Let EA be some matrix, and I'm going to write the matrix as mu A, and then it's just some linear combination of the coordinate basis. E mu A is just a matrix. Okay, it's an n by n matrix. We've got a sum on mu here. The position of the indices on E is a little odd, but don't worry about it. That's a hang-on in my notation from supersymmetry, where you have to keep track of how you commute your coordinates, because not all your coordinates commute. But yeah, I could just as well write this on the other side. I could define this the other way, a more normal direction. It's just a definition, and this is the way I always do it. So it's not going to lead us to any particular traumas.
When you have space between the E and the A.
What's that?
When you have space between the E and the A, right?
Yeah. The A is to the right.
No, right? I mean, unto the left. Right.
A space? No space. Okay. This is a form.
Right. But I'm saying the A on the second part. Second part.
There's only one position on the form.
Okay.
So you do not need a space there. Okay. What we want is EA with EB to be, it depends on the space. If we're in space-time, we would choose A to, right? We just choose A to AB here for a space-time. If we have a Euclidean space, we just choose delta AB, you know, whatever range. You know, but basically what we want here is plus or minus ones everywhere. I mean, you can have spaces of different signature, you know, different numbers of space and time directions. So a time-like direction is one where you have a minus one. When you diagonalize, you make an orthonormal metric. A plus one is a Euclidean piece to the space. So if you're dealing with a Euclidean space, these are all plus ones. In space-time, you've got one minus one and three plus one. If you're doing the super string theory in 10 dimensions, you have one minus sign and nine plus one. It's still a Lorentzian space, but bigger. So you make this demand. I'll go ahead and do it for a Lorentzian thing. What this means is that E knew A for these coefficients, E knew B, then just substitute this and use the inner product on these, so G knew nu is equal to A to AB. Now, these have to be invertible, or else this basis doesn't span the same space as those bases. These are basis vectors. You have to have N independent ones, so those have to be invertible. So I could also write dx mu is EA mu times the EA, where EA mu E mu B is Kronecker dA, and we have to have it the other way, E mu A EA nu is Kronecker mu nu, like that. So if the Greek is down, it's that coefficient right there. If the Greek is up, it's the inverse. Okay, so these coefficients are inverse to E mu A. And that's what I've written here. Now, if I look at it this way, the inner product of dx mu dx nu is g mu nu, but it's also equal to these coefficients times the inner product of the Thank you. is not working here. Is the signal back on?
Yeah. It isn't for me usually. This building's terrible outside.
Yeah, I've got a couple of hours.
Think we can finish this? Go, Jake, go.
Well, it's not too bad. So you know the metric, you can find the proving to. So, all this is really saying is that any metric can be written as the specific basis vectors times, if that makes sense. You choose basis vectors depending on the metric to make it so that when you curve the space-time, they're orthogonal to each other.
They're components.
Yeah. Well, you're choosing, pretty much all he's doing is he's choosing out specific basis vectors with those E's. The specific orthogonal in that basis. And then you multiply those orthogonal vectors by your eta, and you end up with the metric.
I think you want to, I think I actually want to like divide by these things, or like multiply by the inverse of those.
Where?
Or you should call it.
On G?
Or?
That's the whole equation, man. That's not, there's not much math there. There's just understanding what it means. So he's chosen a basis and then
so E is part of the coordinate basis.
Yeah.
And then, so at least G is the metric and eta is
the metric in Minkowski.
So,
this seems like me like a really complicated way to do a like to take your metric matrix and do like a reduced row echelon type of operation.
Exactly, that's what row echelon basically is. See, the beauty of this is it gives you orthogonal bases in whatever your metric is, or whatever space curve you've got.
Right. So you can have a matrix with, say, 20 separate
curve geometry. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. However, you know, n dimensions, whatever. This is the way to do it in n dimensions.
This is the way to do it in n dimensions.
As opposed to, say,
an n curve dimensions.
Which is how
too.
I would know how to
these,
do it.
These bases are going to be curving as they go, so these are going to be functions. These aren't just going to be your normal. These bases are going to change, and like if you drew them in Euclidean, they could go wah, 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 all over the place. And to this, they would be always be orthogonal. Just like when you draw Minkowski space time, you draw these 45-degree angle lines, and they're orthogonal, and these guys are orthogonal. It just screws up what we see as orthogonal. And this is saying this is how we can unmesh that screw up orthogonal idea and have something truly orthogonal in space time or in a curved manifold. Is that right, Juan? I think that's pretty much it. The most basic way of looking at it. Because what it looks like is he's got a coordinate, he's just a double. In matrix notation, if you want to change coordinates, all you do is you put one coordinate system and the other coordinate system around your central matrix. So this looks like a change of coordinates, and E is normally denoting a change of coordinates, a normal change of coordinates. And since you're doing the same thing on both sides of your eta, you're doing it twice, you're changing coordinates. And all it's saying is you can pick specific coordinates such that G looks like eta. Does that make sense?
There's no and there. Right? There's just
a catastrophic failure.
So, is that wrong?
So, I have to look at the picture.
Okay.
So, here. Your new basis, your coordinate basis, and here's your Minkowski, right?
Right. And you're just shifting or changing, and they don't have to be linear basis, they can be whatever they want. At least that's what my brain picked up on the second you
so
looked at
it. So
what
doesn't have to be orthonormal?
E is orthonormal, and eta is orthonormal, but put them together and they're not necessarily.
Ah. Okay.
So they're both, it's kind of a way of
pulling out eta so that you have, you know, you got two orthonormal pieces. So what you're doing is you're pulling out this thing so that you can end up with a basis that preserves our idea of orthonormal. If I'm wrong, correct me, Juan. I don't know. That's the way I interpret this. Don't take it.
I need the ladder.
The law. What?
A ladder. So you can climb up.
Far over my head. Something. No. I always turn the things into matrices on my head, which is not always right.
So then,
And the way you invert is just
on the cusp of understanding what the point of this is.
So, but if it's orthonormal, you can have any sign. It needs to be one down the diagonal, though.
Right, exactly.
It could have any sign.
Yeah, it just has to be one. Normalized, one, and orthogonal, meaning that two basis vectors, when multiplied together, must A equals B.
You just say X.
It's just this.
Zero.
It's zero. And see, exactly what he's got here.
A, unless A equals B, it has to be one or zero. Plus or minus, doesn't matter. So this here is defining orthogonal for eta. So by definition, if A and B are different, then eta is different. All right, cool. So then what he did is he expanded what our dot product is here. Because we've got EA dot EB. If you raise the indices on this, one of these, then it's going to be a sum across, and that's a dot product here. This is our definition. So he's doing a dot product between two of these things. And then he ends up going, all right, so that's this equals this. Wait, no, I just wrote here. No, the dot product of these equals A to A to A. Okay, that's the whole point. We're trying to make this equal that. So then what we do is we just invert these and you've got this equation. Once you just flip this, since this is inverse, you flip it over and bring it over, flip it over and bring it over. And so dx dot dx equals g, that's where he came here. This is where he got the dx, the cross product, or the dot product of these things.
So that's just the dot product in this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's an easy proof by dot product. All he's doing is he's taking his definition of a dot product, coming up with something that he defines here. He defines this here, and then he just goes through this, their definition, to the, right now, what is it? If we go here and we move this to this side, we get this equation. And then we notice that this is the inverse. From here we go, all right, so dx. So we're going to do this operation on this. Will give us a G, or this operation on these will give you a G. That's just the definition again. That's the whole point. That's why we defined it that way. And G by this here equals E eta.
So when we move our E over the O to the other side, we flip the up and down index.
That's defined as, that's right here, that's this definition right here. So, and then what this says is this says that what are these?
Oh, I was just thinking. Oh, I get it.
Oh.
Because when you flip them, then the Kronecker works on it.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Flips it.
Exactly. So this, I'm thinking that what this means is that you can't
choose. I don't get that. There are different indices. So just algebraically,
you define it that way.
Move one across. So
multiply both sides by one.
Okay, and you get, and on the other side,
you move it over by dividing it or by,
well, here.
We got our thing, okay? So if we say that this is the inverse of this, we can multiply equals eta, right? So if you say this is the inverse, you can multiply both sides by the same thing. It's just basic algebra. Here we go, e, say, alpha mu, which is the inverse here. So, and then multiply this side by a 2. Alpha mu, or alpha mu. Now this becomes a Kronecker over 1.
Okay.
And this becomes something that looks like this. Just do it with the second one again. You get this full equation with this. Does that make sense?
So you're getting a trace.
Huh?
So you're getting a trace.
Yeah. Are you getting a trace?
You get both turn into 1, that's for sure. It's a trace. Right. Oh, delta.
Oh, that's cool. Anyway. So. There should be a constant out in front of that.
Did you get that thing yet? Joe, what's that? The squared thing? The box?
Oh, I've got my indices wrong. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no, I do.
That's okay. There we go.
That's fine.
That fixes it. Alright, just change your indices here. So if you just multiply by mu b on both sides, then this disappears and gives us a Kronecker a b. And then b becomes a. Okay, sweet. And then you do it again. Sorry about that. You were right about the Kronecker. I had the wrong index. Yeah.
Jake?
Yeah.
I'm going to heckle you and say your ego looks like crap.
My everything looks like crap. don't discriminate against anyone. They all look like crap. It's okay.
Ada is especially exquisite.
Well, thank you. I feel so much better about myself.
I thought it was like a cursed Z for a second.
Oh.
It
looks like a tree.
All right.
Yeah,
there you go.
Ada. Yeah, I'm using. This is going to be the best audio lecture ever.
Just try to backslash ETA.
There we go.
Better? Slightly? Okay. Ada, AB. We'll make it look. Okay, we're going to make this look pretty, so that's not complaining. Yes.
I don't think Jim is going to be back in the next 5 minutes, so I'm actually just going to head out.
Oh, you got to go?
Well, yeah, I have to work. So. Yeah. And so I'm just going to head.
So when you... Oh, yeah. Does everybody know how... Is there any questions on that? Because I understand this stuff. I don't know how to go further, but I know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when E is bold, that's a...
That's the form.
That's a measure or a
form?
And then there's that other E is the vector.
Yeah, this E is just a...
It's a vector.
This E is just a normal. It's got the indices on it. It's got the D. This E is actually a differential form.
It's just its basis.
Yeah. Well, it's just this E with its basis. So what you're doing is you're saying, all right, this is the index that comes across its basis.
Yay, there's much rejoicing. Does anyone have like the homework problems? We could just work on one before the light's gone.
I probably do.
Yeah,
What's his website?
I don't know. It's not the physics class website. That's how I get there.
I thought it was like 50 or something.
Yeah, oh, 35 something. 35/55/50. Oh. It's about to take the place where 35
has to go. Oh, I thought it was 55.
Yeah. So, Joe, are you up for the taking pictures of? I'm thinking about doing these things on the board, and having Joe take a picture, and then have Joe do it on the board and take a picture of his. The handwriting will be totally different. So, I was thinking about your idea of just doing it once and changing the colors, but my handwriting is just so unmatchable that I think you should do those.
What do you mean doing it once and changing the colors?
We talked about doing that once, actually, at one of my engineers in the class. You know, we did a problem on the board in the geology. We're just thinking, you know, we just end up, you know, the whole person fixes the board, stick the feature, just by my appearance, for the fair sentiment, same board. Yeah. We'll do that together, yeah.
There you go. No, still 21, but seems fun.
Let's see. This is the first one we already did.
Okay. Oh, he's done.
Sweet. Yeah. All right. My our heater seems to have died. The house was very cold this morning, and there's a guy there working on it now. So I had to talk to him and sort that out a bit. We didn't get it sorted, but it can wait. This is the way you construct an orthonormal frame for differential forms. And these are really nice to use. You want to expand a one form in an orthonormal basis if you're going to be using in your product and things like that. This is the way to go. It's the basis we actually usually use. Now, when you translate to vectors, okay, I showed you how to write div and curl and grad in terms of the components of the contravariant components of a vector, but those are still in a coordinate basis. There's a duality between forms and vectors. And you can write this with a bracket, too. Each form is dual to some coordinate object. Now, a coordinate basis for vectors, remember, vectors in general relativity are directional derivatives along a curve. And a coordinate basis for those is just a set of partial derivatives, like this. And the two are related by a Kronecker delta.
Oh, cool.
Right? So, for example, if we have a one form and, we can combine that with what our form is. Suppose we have a one form omega and some vector v. Right. This is a number. We can evaluate the form on the vector, or you can write it the other way around, evaluate the vector on the form, but this is a real number because you use this product. So omega of v can be written as omega mu dx mu, the inner product with v mu dx mu, and you just end up with the sum. You get a Kronecker, and then you get w mu v mu, which you know to be an invariant, a coordinate invariant quantity. It's just a dot product. It's the, you know, the invariant inner product of two vectors,
So, but for this, they have to be
It has to be one form. It can't be higher dimensional than that multidimensional vector.
Right, yeah, you could put multiple vectors. You can, in fact, think of forms as linear maps on vectors or multilinear maps. So, a P-form is a P-fold linear map on P-vectors. Right? It's linear on each slot. What this means is, this is not really the basis you want to use for vectors either. It's not I hat, J hat, K hat. Well, actually, it happens to be, okay, the ddx, ddy, and ddz are the same basis as I hat, J hat, and K hat. But that only happens in like Cartesian coordinates, in a flat space, that you can have a coordinate basis and an orthonormal basis be the same thing. That's rare. So, for example, ddr, dd theta, dd phi are not orthonormal. They don't have the same correspondence. They're not the same as r hat, theta hat, and phi hat. So they have the same direction, but they're not normalized properly. So they are orthogonal, but they're not normal. We can find the relationship between them, though. It's not hard to do. Because we use an identity much like this. If we want an orthonormal vector basis of, let's say three basis vectors, so we want to expand these, I can write this as some matrix, what should I call it? Let's call it EI. What letter should I use here? Let's say M, DDXM. So these are the coordinate basis. The E's are an orthonormal basis, and the same kind of a relationship is going to hold. So we want E hat I, E hat J to be a Kronecker IJ, a diagonal one, Euclidean space, the metric. This is a metric for Euclidean space, not the Kronecker delta. Same matrix, of course, but, it's doubly covariant, so it's a metric. This has to be EIM EJN on GMN, where GMN is the metric in spherical coordinates. Well, we know what that is. So, let's see, if we invert these, we can also write, this form, GMN has to be the inverses to these, EMIENJ, Kronecker IJ. And we know that this is 1 r squared sine squared theta. And it's handy that it's diagonal, because that just means that E can be diagonal too. So if you just look at this relationship, stare at it long enough, you see that EMI just needs to be the square root of this stuff, 1 r sine theta. Because if I take two of these like this and contract, with this identity, I'm going to get that. So, for a diagonal one, it's easy to do this. Now, let's see what happens.
This corresponds to a change of basis, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. We're just, a change of basis. It's a simple idea, the change of basis, but you wrench around a little bit. So, the relationship between an orthonormal basis and a coordinate basis in spherical coordinates is what? The orthonormal basis, EI hat, right, that's what we call R hat, theta hat, phi hat. That's going to be EIM times DDXM. And we now know what that is, because EIM is the inverse to EMI. So it's 1 over r, 1 over r sine theta, times ddr, dd theta, and dd phi. So we see that r hat is ddr. We see that theta hat, just multiplying this out, is going to be 1 over r dd theta, and phi hat is 1 over r sine theta dd phi. Okay. So, when you do the translation, you know, like you've got the curl formula or you know, the gradient, divergence, whatever. Well, not so much with the gradient, because that's not a function. But if you've got a curl or a divergence, you're acting on a vector. You've got to remember to think about what basis those vector components are written in. So, we had a formula for the curl. Let me go back and do that curl formula and take this into account. Because if I hand you a vector in spherical coordinates, you know, I mean, Jackson never considers, you know, using any other basis than this one, than the orthonormal one, when he's writing those vector components. Yeah, okay.
I was just wondering, this is kind of off, well, sort of on topic. Does that mean that we have eigen states or vectors, or, well, covariant vectors for a metric, since we can write this by definition, then those bases, whatever they are, would be eigen, right?
Why?
Because you multiply it in front and back and you get that diagonal matrix. That's one of the definitions of an eigenstate.
Multiply front and back and you get...
The change of basis thing, if you change by something eigenvector, it becomes a diagonal matrix. That's the definition of eigenvector.
I see. These would be the diagonalizing matrices for G nu nu.
Which means
they are eigenvectors. Yeah. So the E's are made up of eigenvectors of G. Yeah,
right.
That's
yeah.
It. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the general matrix would have eigenvectors. A general metric would have eigenvectors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's symmetric, so it's diagonal.
Exactly, so it has real.
Now, if the signature is funny, diagonalization,
it's still diagonalized. Right there. If that dot product truly exists legally within the base.
Well, we're talking about metrics as manifolds. The spacetime is a manifold with Lorentzian metric.
Right.
So we always have the metric. I wanted to do this example of a curl once again and put it in terms of this basis instead of the coordinate basis, because what I wrote for you before was the coordinate basis. Let's just run through that real quickly, and I'll give you this example of how to do it. So we want the curl. We know that the curl arises from the exterior derivative of a one form, but we want to map that to a vector, so we want star d omega. So that gives us another one form built out of the anti-symmetrized derivatives of w. This is the object we want, and that's going to be star of, say, dj omega k dx j which dx k would be d of omega. Then we take the dual of that, so we're going to have dj omega k. Then we need some metrics j I g j m e I m n dxn, and that covariant vector is going to map to a contravariant vector given by taking. Okay, what three indices do we have on this coefficient?
N,
just the one.
It's a vector.
I want to raise it. So let's write G L N down. Let's see. What?
Yeah, that's right. N is three indices. Yep. You have a sum over the IMN.
Yeah, the sum. Well, yeah, the sum on M with dx. So just look at the index on dx, because that's the thing we're chopping off, right?
J, I, K, M. Everything but the N is sum. The N is on the basis.
Oh, okay.
So it's a covariant vector with index N.
It's easier just to look at the basis.
So I'm going to raise the N to an L. You have dj, omega k, g, ki, g, k, m, e, I, m, n. So that ought to be the curl of the vector omega, and that would be the L component.
We've taken the curl and now we've turned it into a contravariant vector.
So these three G's simply raise the indices on the E. So we have E, let's get the order right here, J, K, L with DJ, omega K.
So that gives us a formula for it, but it's in a coordinate basis. Everything I've written here is in a coordinate basis.
So, one thing I did write last time is how to write this in terms of the vector components of omega. You just stick a metric in here. So, K, let's see, I, omega, I up. So, now those are the contravariant components, but still in a coordinate basis. And these components are still in a coordinate basis. Now, if I want to go from a coordinate basis to a vector basis, all right, so this is, if I want to write the curl of omega, all right, that these components, these coefficients, ddxl, and I can find them that way. Now, let's see. I want it in an orthonormal basis. So there are two things I have to change. I want to put that in an orthonormal basis, and I want to transform that L to an orthonormal basis. So let me use the this matrix. So I think this GKI, right, I can write that as EKMEIN, where these, or let's use A and B for the orthonormal indices, A to B here. A to AB. We have that. So, if I replace, if I look at GKI omega I can write that as EKA EIB eta AB omega I. And it looks like this combination right here does it. So I have EKA eta AB, and that combination is omega A. That's in the orthonormal basis.
Alright, so I've managed to put an E onto it, and then I have to, you know, stick those things in. What's that?
Omega B.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, now I do the same thing for this. I can write this as the curl of omega, the L component. Then I need an E, L, A. I can stick that in if I put an E inverse A m d dx m. So that gives me my orthonormal vector basis. That's just e to the a, the unit vector basis. And these components are the ones I want. So the components I need are e, l, let me be careful with parentheses here, b, I'll call it c. Then we need jkl, then the partial j of, then this I replace by this stuff here, ka, a to ab, or I'm sorry, we're in Euclidean space, this is Kronecker ab. Let's do it. Orthonormal Euclidean free space, omega b. That is the curl of vector omega in the orthonormal basis right there. Now, this isn't so bad. I mean, so if we want to find the curl in spherical coordinates, all right, we know what the matrix is here. We know this matrix and its inverse, they're fairly simple. So we can just write it out. Well, that looks messy, doesn't it? But it's not so bad. Let's look at the curl of omega. The R component. So, you know, C is going to be R or theta or phi. We're in the R hat, theta hat, phi hat basis now. And so let's just see what this one is. Well, this is going to be easy because the R component here is just 1, the inverse to it is 1. So this is just going to be 1. So there's a what is it? C has to be equal to L, and R, L, then E, J, K, L, D, J, of all this stuff, and then let's see. What do we have here? Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll get a couple of things here. E, K, A, double A, B, which doesn't do anything. B. Okay, so that makes the L into an R. So this is 1 over the determinant, square root of the determinant of the metric. The determinant of the metric, right, the metric is the square of the
four.
So the square root is just the determinant of this. R squared defines theta. So R squared defines theta. Now this becomes an epsilon JKR, where J and K now have to run over theta and phi. Then DJ of EKA delta AB omega B. So now let's just start doing some sums. We're going to have theta and phi, and we're going to have phi and theta. So there are going to be two terms here. Let's do theta phi first, then r theta phi, that's plus 1. So this is dd theta of e sub phi a del a b of u b. Then we get phi theta is antisymmetric, so we get a minus, and we have a dd phi here, and this is going to be e sub theta a del a b of omega b, close bracket. So we just work through substituting in. 1 over r squared sine theta. Then we have dd theta. All right, e phi, E is diagonal, so it's phi phi. And let's see.
Can't we just drop that index on omega and then raise it again with that E and put omega in the E?
That'll put it back to a coordinate index. That's what we've been trying to get rid of.
Oh.
That theta there is a coordinate index. The B is what we want. That's the orthonormal index. So all of that other stuff was put in there in order to get rid of enable us to write a B on the omega.
Okay.
So, but let's see. So we need theta. Let's see. It's the inverse to this. So it's going to be an R sine theta. So this is R sine theta. And that's a phi, so this is a phi, so we get the phi component, phi hat, that's orthonormal for the component here. Then we subtract d d phi. Now we put in the theta component here is just r, then this is Kronecker, and we get omega orthonormal theta. One of the R's cancels, comes through the derivative, so we have 1 over R sine theta, this is the expression then, of sine theta times omega phi minus d d phi of omega theta, where the components of omega are now in the orthonormal frame. Then the other two components are similar. I can do another example if you want to see it, but do you? You get the idea. So you just track through. It's kind of a long string of things here, but each step is easy if you're just careful to step through what you're doing with these indices. This is much easier than transforming coordinates. Okay, if you had to write the components of the curling Cartesian coordinate and change ddx into some linear combination of ddr, dd theta, dd phi, change, ddy, change all the x, y's, and z's into the corresponding r theta phi component, it would be a real mess. We'd be here all afternoon. We have been here all afternoon. Never mind. Even longer. All evening.
Actually done that before.
Through the coordinate transformation. They should, and you should appreciate them how much effort this saves. Because everything here was actually easy. Those coordinate matrices, the transformation matrices are really pretty messy. Much easier to make a mistake there.
No, I didn't wait. It's time to get up. Take that back. But,
Okay. Let's see. I wanted to do... this was the example I wanted to do. So I think I've covered points one and three both. Stressing the awareness of which basis you're using, coordinate or orthonormal, and being sure to track it through and use the right one, whichever that happens to be for your problem. The other thing I want to do is just show you how to do the Laplacian. It has a special form depending on what kind of object it's acting on. You can have the Laplacian of a function, you can have the Laplacian of a vector or of a tensor, a matrix, anything like that. So the formula depends on what rank of form you're writing the Laplacian for. So let's run through that. Any questions on this sort of stuff and the coordinate transformations and all that? I discovered some notes I wrote up that actually talk a little more about coordinates than we have here. They were written for a group with different prerequisites, so it's not exactly tailored to to you guys who actually at this point have a little more sophistication than the audience I wrote them for. But I'll post those on the website to put them under some current chapter. And if you can get something out of those, they might be useful for you. So give that a try.
Can you go over the third line here?
Sure.
As you...
Here?
And you...
Okay, so this is just the anti-symmetric symbol, right? So since I already have an R determined, this has got to be theta phi or phi theta.
Okay.
Right, it's running over the three possible coordinate directions. I'm using the letter for the coordinate
instead
of the number. So when J is theta, I get a dB theta.
Okay.
How about this?
And then K has to be phi. So this becomes phi. E is diagonal, so it's phi phi.
Okay.
So this gives phi phi, and so this becomes the phi component of the vector here. So that B ends up being, and then E phi phi is just R sine theta.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought you were doing, but I wasn't saying.
Yeah, here it is. This is the inverse. It's the inverse matrix to this one. I guess I didn't write it out, or I erased it.
I'll be coming out.
What's that?
I think I'll be getting it out. But
yeah. Okay. So, but yeah, you can see that E coordinate orthonormal, the inverse to this. So this is the orthonormal index here. A is here. It's going to be the inverse of that matrix 1 R sine theta.
Is there some easy choice of convention we can use so that we can keep track of what the coordinates are?
I use this all the time in relativity. And my convention is to use Latin for orthonormal and Greek for coordinates. It's a convention I like. It's a little different than a whole irrelevantly different convention that some people use. But that's my convention. You know, if you can choose a different alphabet for them instead, then it's just always clear. What I've been doing here, or eventually tried to do, was use letters from the beginning of the alphabet for orthonormal and later in the alphabet for coordinate. That's not quite so obvious. So, better yet, put a little hat on the orthonormal ones. But you know, anything that makes it totally clear to you which is a good idea.
The hat, I can't tell the difference.
I like the Latin and Greek. You know, I use Greek for coordinate, Latin for orthonormal, and I do that quite consistently. You know, throughout our work. Other questions?
So, I've got another question.
Yeah.
What is the L index on going way back?
Over way back, for, okay.
For,
L here.
L for us.
L is a coordinate index here. Right, that's a coordinate basis.
If you notice, if you look at your cross product, where I just added the free L, so
you
just pulling that L out.
So. Yeah, this is the coefficient. And I raised it with a G, right? G is coordinate. Right, Kronecker would be orthonormal. So that L is still a coordinate basis. So I've raised it, the free index is now an L up, coordinate L up. And so I've kept it here. Here I've actually put it in the basis so I could write a vector equation. So these are like the basis vectors. They're not units, but these things are directional derivatives in the coordinate direction. So it's that makes this expression a vector. Okay.
I think so.
Any more questions?
I'm honestly pretty shaky on that, but I'm gonna look at it and see if I can.
Okay. We can. Dwell into it a little more. Delve into it.
just read it.
Yeah, here we've written something that's a one form. All right, in a coordinate basis for forms. So as a one form, you know, this is a covariant vector. There are a bunch of sums over all of the indices here are coordinate. The only free index is n. So I've taken that expression here, only free index is n. I want to make it a contravariant vector, so I multiply by the metric.
Okay.
Right?
And that's the L.
So now it's a contravariant vector. It's a component of this curl, but it's a, you know, and it's a contravariant vector.
So you wrote that left-hand side after you wrote the right-hand side.
Probably, yeah. Well, I sort of knew where I was going. I could have written either one first, but I might have, so I'm not sure. Logically, yeah, I'm taking this, I'm raising the index, I'm getting that. Okay. All right. So, Laplace. We good? There's another question? Okay.
Oh, wow. I just thought Oh, never mind.
Yeah?
Well, it's a little Laplacian. So it's going to be... I was thinking through what it would be.
What did you get?
Well, it's going to be a del star del or del star del star. Or well, star del star del.
Okay, so we're looking at the Laplacian. We've done our example. The Laplacian... All right, what could it be?
I del... Or star, or well, del star del. Or D star. What am I saying?
D star. What am I writing?
D.
D.
Of what?
Of what?
Right. It depends on what it's acting on.
Oh,
right.
D star D would be of a one form, I believe.
So we could take this of a one form? You know, we could. Okay, so. The Laplacian, first thing to notice is it's a scalar operator. Second thing to observe, well, maybe first you've already observed, is it's got two D's in it. So it's got to be so the Laplacian, let's call it del squared, is a map from lambda P to lambda P. And it's got to depend on... Since it's two derivatives, it's got to have two D's in it. I'll just denote that bizarrely that way. all right. What can we write with two D's in it that takes P forms to P forms? So look at your D star D. All right. This is if we start with a P form here. That's all right. This is a p plus one form. Star of that gives us an n minus p minus one, and n of that.
Oh,
d of that gives us n minus p. What do we need to do? How do we go from n minus p to p? Another star. So this will do it. So we get that last in there, and now it's p. So star D takes lambda P to lambda P. Is there any other operator that takes lambda P to lambda P?
P star D star D.
That is star,
no,
star
D star D star.
Are you dyslexic?
Yes. Star D star of omega P.
Yeah, okay. All right, so this is P. We take star of that, we get N minus P. We take D of that, we get N minus P plus 1. We take star of that, and we get N minus P plus 1. What's that equal to? That's P minus 1. And finally, we take D of that, and we get P. So D star also takes lambda p to lambda p. Is there anything else? We can, you know, we have to alternate d and star, right? If we don't, we've got two stars together or two D's together. Two D's together is fatal. That's zero. Two stars together, the stars go away, and we've got two D's together again. So we have to alternate. So these are the only things we can do. You know, another star just, you know, takes us out of land of P, so that doesn't do any good. You know, either at the beginning or the end, it's not going to work. So these are the only two operators we have to work with. And the question is, which or which combination of them is the Laplacian? It takes a combination, usually. Okay, L squared of F, right? You know, this is lambda 0 to lambda 0. Let's look at these things. If we look at star G of F, right, what is it?
I know it's got to be that one, because if you take the star of F, you're going to have the whole thing, and then as soon as you put G to that, it's 0.
Perfect. That's right. Yeah. If I took d star of f, all right, this is an n form since f is a 0 form. D of an n form is an n plus 1.
0.
It's 0. So this is identically 0.
Right.
All right, so it has to be the other one. Exactly.
Yeah, there's space.
So star d. Sorry, what is space one?
Like the living space.
Yeah. How do you travel in the fourth dimension? D-star your function. Okay. Star D star of, what do we have? Partial I of F. Let's work in Euclidean space, any dimension you like, but there's the first step, then we have star D. We take the dual of that, so we're going to have EIF, there's the coefficient, then we need a G, I, J, well, I'll work with it. Let's take a positive, a signature N metric. Then we have E, J, K through L. More instructive for you guys to work in three dimensions or n? Do you have a preference? You know, when you're working with differential forms, it often doesn't matter what dimension you're in. This is one reason we're able to do the calculations we do in our research. It sometimes can be very illuminating to work a problem in arbitrary dimensions. Some dimensions have properties that others don't. And things like 10 and 7 and, you know, 4. You know, there are some dimensions that are actually very special. They've got certain algebraic properties that you don't see in other dimensions. So let's do it this way. Then we have D, X, K, wedged with everything up to D, X, L.
Nothing.
And we have 1 over n minus 1 factorial.
You were just joking about why the dimensions might be special, like 27 or 4.
And 26 is. You know, they're mostly special because of the complex numbers, the quaternions and the octonions.
Okay.
7 is special because of the octonions. There happen to be 7 different ways to do a sphere in 7 dimensions. They're, you know, squashed 7 spheres or something. They exist because of the octonians. Supersymmetry works in 10, let's see, well, certain dimensions. I think it's 10 and 5 and 4. Anyway, you know, only certain dimensions, and that again is because of these number systems. So we want D of that. So 1 over n minus 1 factorial, D, 9j, k, l, m,
di of f, whoops, be careful here, gij, let's get the coefficient of this, there's a root g here, that goes inside this derivative. So, tidy this up a little. So we want dm of all of that. Like that. Then we have epsilon jk through L. Dxk through dxf. Close parenthesis.
There should be a dxm on there too, shouldn't there?
Yeah. Keep forgetting that one. There we go. Wedge.
I on the one. So you got the I and the M.
I have some here.
Oh, never mind.
And okay, so then one more joule. So we take the coefficient. D M of root G G I J partial I of F, right, that way I say that. I with J K through L. Okay, so we have M K through L indices, so we need E M K up through L. Forgot the metric. G M is M K through L. N G K O G L T E sub N O T. What's free? Well, should be nothing left free. It's true. There's nothing left free. We had one of these. That means there are n minus one of those. Then we added one more, so there are n, and the dual of that is just a function, so that's all there is. Now, these just raise all of those. So we're going to have 1 over n minus 1 factorial. Then this, right, this becomes an e up, so we have a 1 over root g, partial m of this stuff. You should be recognizing what we did before with the divergence formula. Because you can actually use the divergence formula to derive this very easily. So now we get epsilon m k through L. And that is Kronecker m j times n minus 1 factorial.
Everybody see why that's the right coefficient?
Oh, you got it.
If you trace the jm, you need to get n factorial from 2 epsilon. But the Kronecker just gives you a factor of n, so you need the n minus 1 factorial to make up the rest of it.
No.
Okay, any questions? So, if I trace M and J here, then I have a full trace of 2 epsilons, that's N factorial. If I trace M and J here, I get just N, so I need the rest of this to make them equal. Now you got it. Good. Alright. So then, star d f is equal to, so the n factorial goes away, and we end up with 1 over root g partial m of quantity
root g, g, m, n, d, n, o. Okay, recall the divergence formula. That star d star of a one form is equal to, right, it's the divergence of omega, you know, the xi. But the formula we got was the divergence formula, di of, what was it here, root g times omega I. So all you have to do is replace omega I by dj raised the index gij of f, you know, for omega I, and you get the Laplacian. So we could have gotten it much more quickly if we remember the divergence formula. Used it. Doesn't hurt to see this again, probably. I told you, the divergence formula is really, really useful. It's a nice one. It comes up. Okay, so let's press on to the Laplacian of a one form. We still have these two operators. So what we want is del squared of a one form. It has to be a linear combination of these two operators. Well, let's look at d star of omega. How do we do this time? Does that one still go away? We've got a one form. This becomes n minus 1, this becomes n, no, didn't die. Then this becomes a 0 form, this becomes a 1 form again. So we're okay, we're going to get something this time. In fact, what do we have? What we have is going to be d of star d star omega, what's that? Yeah, it's the divergence formula, right?
We just wrote it.
Yeah.
Take the on the outside.
So, yeah, let's just... you know, apply d to, well, what does that look like? It's 1 over root g. We have a partial m of root g, the omega m up, where we've just, omega m up is just gmn on our original omega down. And that is a zero form. We want to get a one form, so we just take one more derivative here. So we've got partial n of all of this. 1 over root g dm root g omega m dxn. So that wasn't too bad, using the divergence formula, I saved a bunch of work. Now, what happens in the next case? Is that the Laplacian? No, not the Laplacian. That's a gradient of a divergence. Right? This is grad div. Let's try the other.
That makes sense. Okay.
Well, you know, that's what it is, right? You know that. Divergence. How do you do the divergence? Starting star. How do you do the gradient? D. Do the one on the other? Gradient. This is how I want you to translate these things when you do these problems. I've got a whole lot of vector formulas, and some involving grad, some just involving a bunch of vectors, cross products and dot products. Use the translation of those operations. So if you want grad div, just write this down.
Yep. That'll be it. What else can it be? That's what it is. Because you know that div, and you know that's a function, and you know how to take the gradient. So you can just go right to the right expression using differential forms. You don't have to translate bit by bit. Just, you know, use the operations you know. If you have curl, what is it? It's just a wedge product. So you're going to replace all the curls by star of a wedge product. Right? So if I see in some formula, you know, I've got A cross B, you know, I'm immediately going to write star of A wedge B. You know, the corresponding form, 2-1 form. That's it. You know, don't necessarily have to work any harder than that to do it. So you can, you'll be able to write these things right down. Okay, let's look at star d of omega. And now this is this whole calculation over again. That was just untrue. Let's see. This is just like what we did in electromagnetism. I could cheat and use our results from the other day. Remember the divergence of Maxwell field tensor, which is the two forms. You know, it looks like this, and you know it still works. You can still use the divergence formula because of the anti-symmetry canceling one of the gammas. I mean, it worked out really neat that way.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, this is still going to be the divergence of this curl thing. Let's see, how would we write that? We can figure it out. Let me just do it for you. It won't take that long. So we have di omega j. Dxi wedge dxj. You take star of that, so we have star d of, we need a dual here, so we have di omega j, gi k, gj l, e k l, let's say m through n, dx m through dx n, and how many of those? N minus 2. So we get our factorial out front. And we take d of that. So we're going to have a couple of metrics here. Eep.
How did you get 2? N minus 2?
K and L are some here, so it leaves N minus 2 indices on the epsilon.
Okay.
So it's an N minus 2 form.
Okay.
So that's what goes here, is how many DXs you've got. Then, alright, so we're going to have a root determinant from this E. We've got our G, I, K, G, J, L, and then our curl stuff. Di omega j, and I didn't leave room for my derivative. Let's say f. Then epsilon k l m through n d x s d x m through d x n. So this is an n minus 1 form, and the dual of it is going to be a 1 form. So over n minus 2 factorial, partial f of, here's our divergence type stuff. K, L, M through N. Okay, now three indices. There's an S here, and then M through N. So I need S, R, G,
M P through G and Q E sub R P Q. How many we got? Alright, there should be one more we need, right? This is N minus 2, that's N minus 1, so there's one more index we need, C, Q, R, S, T, C, X, T, and then a 1 over 1 factorial doesn't do anything. So there's our expression. Now we resolve the epsilon. So what I want to do, you really pretty much always want to use these to raise those. That leaves one down. I'm going to raise the last one and put a metric down. So I'll show you what I mean. We're going to get an E up, and I'm going to write it with a 1 over root G. We're going to get a 1 over root G out of it, so I'll put that down now. And you see we are just getting the divergence formula here again. So now, all of those indices raised except one, but I'm going to raise all of them, K, L, M through N down, then I have an epsilon, we get S, M through N, and then I raise the T to a U, and I need a G, U, T to bring it back down to a T, because that one wasn't actually raised, and then we have a DXT here. Okay, does everybody see what I did? So I raised them all, and it took one extra metric to do it, so I need one metric down to undo the extra one I did. Now, these two epsilons are...
do they have a different dimension?
No. Should... P through Q here are the same as M through N. So,
there
are okay. N minus two of those.
I was missing the K on the one that's not quite.
And then there are two more indices.
Right. Do you want to cycle the U to the
connection? Yeah, I want to cycle these to the same position.
Right.
So I want to get that U up to the front.
Right.
So the thing I want to look at is E. K, L, M through N. And what I have is S, M through N, U. That's equal to, I want to bring this U clear up to in front of the M at least. So I need minus 1 to the N minus 2. Then I have epsilon K, L, M through N. And epsilon S U M through N. So now the summed ones are all in the same position, and I know what's the positive sign. So this has to be almost all the indices are the same. I have to have K equal to S and L equal to U, or interchange. So we get a plus sign if S is K and if U is L, and a minus sign if S is L and U is K.
Oh, and N minus 2.
And we have some factorial thing. What is it? N minus 2?
Minus 1 to the N minus 2 is just minus 1 to the N. That's even. Thing about it.
Yeah. If I trace these two, I'm going to get N factorial, right?
Right. Oh, no. I'm just saying you can simplify that N in the front. Negative 1 to the N minus 2 is negative 1 to the N.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's why I chose to put it there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a reason.
Right. I put it there instead of in front of the S so I could get rid of the 2. Yeah, you're right. Tracing here, I get N squared minus, setting S equal to K, that's just going to be N. So that's N times N minus 1 times lambda. So lambda has to be equal to
n minus 2 factorial. So we've figured out what this coefficient is, so star of v of star of v of omega is equal to, right, nice, the n minus 2 factorial goes away. We get these Kronekers, which are a little funny. Oh, let me think about this. Did I? I'm wondering if I lost a factor of two. Oh no, I didn't. That's right. You got it. Oh, you got your lab.
Yeah, I got to do my lab.
Okay. Yeah, we're pretty close here. And this is about the last thing. So yeah.
Later.
Okay. Yeah. You guys holding up okay? Yeah. So when we finish up a minute. So we've got a minus 1 to the n, taking Jake's suggestion, 1 over root g. Then we have a partial f, and we've got root g, the metric I, k, and j, l. And then we've got our, basically our omega I j, yeah, di of omega j. And then all this stuff is replaced. Well, we've got a g u t dx t. Let me put in this stuff. Delta f k delta u l minus delta f l delta u k. And then we have the g u t dx t. I'll get back to some more normal letters for indices before the end here. So we're going to get two terms. In the first term, we have minus 1 to the n. You know, this stuff doesn't do anything. Then the s is going to become a k. So we have a dk of root g, let me write this as k I g l j, metric is the metric, just tidying up here. Then delta u l makes this a g sub l, what haven't we used? Maybe we can use m here, dx m. That's the first term here. For the second term, we need to interchange. We have a minus sign. We have similar stuff here. S is going to become L this time. And then we have root G. G, K, I, G, L, J. D I omega j, and then we get g k m dx. Yeah. Okay. Now, what are we looking at? The thing to notice is that in this first term, the d k with the g k I and the d I give. You know, if it was Cartesian, that would be 1, these would be delta, that would just be little quotient of the coefficients omega. In the second term, this dl means that we're contracting with the j on omega. That's a divergence. This term is grad div again. That's the gradient of the divergence again. Let's see, we had it written out here, without the metric, but we could write it with the metric. Let's see. Now, those root g's aren't in the same place. We probably did it right instead of, didn't we? Yeah, because here we take a d first. Let me write this in a slightly different way, put this metric in explicitly. They'll look a little bit more similar.
So the second term is divergence, and the first term is what?
Yeah.
Am I right? The second term is divergence.
I think so.
Yeah. And it's either, that's strange, but it could be any which sign, depending on it. So the first term, do we have something, does that correspond to something physical?
That's what?
That one is a mess.
It almost looks like a zero, almost.
It looks like zero to you?
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Seems like we can factor a lot of out of that. Pause. I gotta work carefully if it isn't like that. are you able to take out chunks that you don't want to use of the audio recording, or does it just go in raw? It'll have the easy can go on too. That just gives it raw. Yeah. At least when there's something that isn't clear between the board.
I'd love to be seeing this stuff through. It's pretty sketchy to me.
I get a good idea, but the problem is it takes time to work it out in all the details. I got to halfway your lesson. That was about 6 pages of stuff. But. You worked with Wheeler every semester that you've been here?
Sort of started working this summer. Yeah.
No, it was 2 summers ago when I first showed up. You were already working with them.
I was trying to learn stuff from them. I'm not really working with them.
Oh, okay.
Right, so.
Oh, you were. Yeah. Were you seeing it for the first time at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah. And me, I hadn't even taken calculus yet. I was. It was silly that I was sitting in there. I was mainly just letting it wash over me.
I remember, you're saying something like, it'll take some time to learn. You're like, yeah, give it a year.
Yeah. About a few.
Like, after learning it, comes around and still, hard to pick up.
I had myself totally sandbagged. I thought that it was going to be not as involved. Weird how parameter is lambda, or not parameter. What is that lambda doing? Where does that come from?
That's the
second line. Oh, it was just saying minus 2, but I don't understand what he was doing in the meantime. And factorial.
You might have 2 lambdas there, I don't know. Oh, never mind, not equal sign.
What's that? See how it might be n minus 2 factorial, right? Because you should be able to count the unsummed indices. So, are what creates the minus 2, right? Or is he not doing anything with that interior thing? And it's just what's in front.
You don't want to hear about it.
I'm afraid that's why we're not engineers.
Yeah, okay. So one of these is the Laplacian and one is with maybe a little extra. We need to sort out what's going on with this metric. In Cartesian coordinates, there's no issue with these metrics. But, you know, there's more junk in here than there is in there. So let's see. So we have to keep track of what the extra stuff's doing to really get that to cancel, right? What we'd like is to add these together so this term cancels that term. You know, then we're left with the Laplacian.
Did you say that the last term is all divergence?
If you look where the L is going, the L is coupled to the J, and the J is this index. So, you know, except for this derivative of that G, this would be omega L up, and you'd have a divergence there. You know, a good way to see what's happening is look in Cartesian coordinates. If it were Cartesian, these would just be Kronecker's. That would be 1, and then you'd just have a divergence on omega L. This would just raise the index on L.
Okay.
The thing that makes it hard to see is that you've got derivatives of all this metric stuff, which is what makes it covariant. But it makes it hard to see what's going on. So in the Cartesian case, where's my marker go? Find the hot one. If we look here in the Cartesian case, this term becomes minus 1 to the n. That's just 1. Then we have partial L of this is 1. This is a Kronecker, so it doesn't really do anything. This is a Kronecker, so it can come inside this derivative and raise that index. So we have Kronecker Ki, and then this is just di of omega, that becomes an L up from this one. So you can see that if you interchange the order here, which you can, delta K M dx M, so that delta means that delta, you get a Kronecker IL, and all this turns into minus 1 to the n partial i omega L dx I, and you can interchange those partials to write this as grad div. So essentially what you're looking at is grad div here in some covariant form. Right. That's the way to figure out what you're looking at. But, and, you know, that's also the way to get the right formula. Whatever all these extra partials are doing, all they're doing is making it covariant. And you know that they are doing that. So what you can do is look at these two expressions in Cartesian coordinates, where everything drops down to simple stuff. Find the right linear combination of the two operators to cancel the terms you don't want and leave you with just the Laplacian. And now, put the coordinates back general, and you've got the covariant expression for the Lagrangian. So, you got all those pictures you need? One.
You're going to add it over here. I think you erased something.
I want to erase here.
Oh, I've got that.
So I want to save this,
okay.
And I want to save that result there.
Okay.
And you're good here?
Yeah, in the middle part. Yeah.
Okay. So what I need to do is look at the Cartesian. Coordinates in flat space, and what we see is that d star omega reduces to, right, these go to 1, that just becomes an omega m up, so we have dn of dm of, and then this g just raises the index omega m. Then dx. Yeah. Right, that's what this reduces to in that special case. Star d of omega becomes, all right, let's track this through. We've got a minus 1 to the n. Then 1 over root g becomes 1. Then we have a partial k of 1 times Kronecker Ki, then a Kronecker Lj, that's going to raise the j on the omega. So we have a partial I and an omega L. Then here we have a Kronecker Lm dxm. Then we have minus 1 to the n. And we just worked this out. Is the rest of that, that should be it right there, right? Partial I, partial L, omega L, dx I. So notice that this is the same thing as that, except for this sign. So also notice that this delta Ki turns all of that into del squared omega L. That's what we want. Pulling the index down to make it a form is fine. So this all becomes minus 1 to the n del squared of, all right, this drops the m, this dx doesn't differentiate, we can just call that omega again. You know, make that the bold form right there. Because it's just going to differentiate the coefficient. Minus 1 to the n, and let's say then dn dm omega m dx n, changing the indices to match this. So clearly, if we add minus 1 to the n times that, we've got it. So what we need is minus 1 to the n, times this one, star d omega. That's going to give us the del squared minus this, and then we add that one. Yeah, d star omega. And that is exactly del squared bold omega. But the right side is coordinate invariant. So must hold in any coordinate. And we're done. So depending on the dimension, it's star d, you know, plus or minus, or it's d star plus or minus star d star d. Now, I've asked you to do this problem for a two-form on the homework. So you got through and you work things out. Do it in whatever dimension you like. If it's simpler not to do, you know, like arbitrary dimension. But what you'll see is that the relative sign between these two terms might depend on the rank of the form. I'm not sure if it does with our conventions here or not. It doesn't actually look like it does. In three dimensions, it does, right? In three dimensions, we've got a minus sign there. In four dimensions, we don't. So, that minus one might be to the NP or something where you're doing a P form. So you might see if you can figure out what the sign is in general. If you get tired, after you're bored, after you quickly go through all the other exercises, you might try and figure that out. So, with a couple 45-minute phone calls, we put in a respectable amount of time today. I'm sorry about those delays and leaving you sitting here, but we don't have any heat at home.
I could square it away.
Well, I don't think they're going to get it fixed today.
So what happens to the heater?
We have indoor heat, so it's hot water heat.
Hot water, okay.
And we've got a small unit, it's about this big. It's called a Munchkin. And it's very high efficiency.